If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I am joined, as always, I am merely the crusty bread to the soup, to the main event that is Finn Martin, the man behind Power Slam, and he is my co-host, as always. Hi Finn.
How are you doing this week, Kenny?
I'm good. I'm recovered from all the travelling and the, you know, venturing across the pond to America, so that's been really good. We've had some great on YouTube. You know, we put up about nine interviews over SummerSlam weekend, and they total 500,000 hits.
So that's wow,
that's been impressive. Really happy with that.
Which video has the most interest?
So the most interest is Braun Strowman. We did a very quick chat with him, asking about the rumours that he was going to face Undertaker last year. That did 108,000.
Wow.
And then, do you know what came second?
Not Jinder Mahal.
Jinder fucking Mahal.
Oh, I knew it.
With 99,000 people watching that fucker rub it in to me that he's still the champion. But anyway, I was going to say, I was kind of taking it easy this week for a lot of it, but I did see that obviously 30 years ago this, or sorry, 25 years ago this week was SummerSlam 92 at Wembley. And I'm actually maybe going to try and watch it later on today, but you wrote a little thing for it over on your website, kind of commemorating the 25th anniversary, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, on finleymartin.co.uk, I wrote something about it, just really about the main event. It wasn't a one match show, because Ultimate Warrior Randy Savage was a pretty good match on the undercard. But I mean, apart from that, it really was a one match show. So it was really about Davey Boy Smith versus Bret Hart, and just how big that was. And it was just enormous. And a lot of American pundits for many years afterwards thought that Warrior versus Savage was the draw. And if you were living in the UK at the time and you were a fan, you would know that it was absolutely David Boy Smith and to a lesser extent Bret Hart that drew that crowd and that made that the event it was. I mean, it's just, you know, it's huge. And the match was obviously amazing. The atmosphere was unlike, I mean, I've never experienced anything like that. I'd never experienced anything like that before and haven't done since live. And, you know, it was an amazing occasion. So yeah, I urge you to go and check out my website for my recollection of that show. It was hard to believe. It's 25 years ago.
And it's only, when you click on the link for the article, it's only £4 to access the article, which I think is really reasonable for an article. It's free. Go check it out. I was going to ask you actually two things about that when I was thinking, because I read it, it's really good. And two things I was... See, in America, when they showed the pay-per-view, because it was, the event happened on the Saturday, but it went on pay-per-view on the Monday, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
In the States, they aired, did they air Savage Warrior last on the US?
I believe they did.
That must be a strange, strange show to watch if you watch it that way. Because
yeah, absolutely.
I couldn't imagine watching it without Bulldog and Brett being the main.
Absolutely, and the reaction to you know, Bulldog versus Hitman in the main event was so much greater than to Warrior versus Savage that it must have felt doubly odd. But yeah, as far as I know, Warrior Savage was placed in the main event spot on the US version of the show on the pay-per-view, because it obviously wasn't shown on pay-per-view in the UK. It was shown on Sky Sports.
Movies Gold, I think you'll find.
It was on the Sky system where we didn't have to pay for it.
Because I remember one of my mum's friends had taped WrestleMania 8 for me, and it was on Sky Movies Gold. And I was like, why is wrestling on Sky Movies Gold? But there you go. But what's funny, even funnier is, can you imagine watching that pay-per-view and with the Warrior Savage things, like the DQ finish, and that's the end of the show? Like, that's how you... But I was going to ask you... obviously the landscape is so different now compared to what it was in 1992, but do you think that, is there a, are we in a climate or a landscape, you think, where there could be a British star who could headline a show, maybe not to that degree, maybe not like 85,000 people going mental, but do you think there is a chance that we could have a UK guy headline a stadium show one day if people got behind them enough, or are we just not in that kind of environment anymore?
80,255, I'll have you know, Kenny McIntosh, the attendance.
which is actually the biggest attendance, because that was bigger than WrestleMania 3, even though they like
that's
to tell
right,
you.
That's right, yeah, that's right. I apologise for that pedantry a moment ago there.
No, don't, I would have done the same thing. But anyway, do you think there is a chance of anything like that ever again?
You mean in the UK?
Yeah.
In a stadium show over here?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean? Or a stadium show in the USA?
A stadium show in the UK, headlined by a UK guy.
Well, I mean, theoretically, it should be possible because there's more Brits in the WWE system than I think there's ever been. There's so many Brits in there. I mean, you know, but there again, maybe that works against the Brits, because when Davey was there, because I think he was the only Brit in the system at the time, apart from, of course, Roddy Piper, Kenny. And but I mean, he was, we know he was Canadian. He was, that was a joke.
Yeah, we have our inverted commas on. You can't see them.
That's it. So the fact that Davey Boy was like the only Brit in the system made him stand out more. And maybe now, because there's a lot of people from the UK and Ireland in the system, maybe it would make it far more difficult for one of them to achieve what was bordering on national hero status, which is what Davey Boy Smith had back then. So it's tough to say, Kenny, how anyone could have that sort of impact. Really, I mean, there isn't anyone in there now who feels like they could be that massive, or even there isn't really any. I mean, which Brits could feasibly be headliners? You know, I mean, I noticed on this week's SmackDown, Dolph Ziggler referred to Finn Balor as a charisma vacuum, and I thought, oh dear, you know, that's obviously a scripted line
coming from Dolph Ziggler. Jesus,
yeah, coming from Dolph Ziggler. But okay, that was a scripted line and everything, but you know, it's I do worry when people are described as that in such a derogatory way on the air. Okay, it's by a heel, but I still do worry when those things are said. Is that what the people in the office are feeling about the guy? Hopefully not. So it's tough to say, really, Kenny, as to who could become that big. I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, on one hand, it should sort of be possible because there's more people than ever in the system. But on the other hand, maybe that makes it more difficult because it's no longer such a novelty to have a British wrestler who's doing well. Now it kind of feels normal. So I think the answer is probably no. But I mean, you would obviously like that to happen because it'd be great for the guy and it'd be terrific for wrestling in this country.
Yeah, no, it'd be good. And I guess it's what, the funny, not to belittle Davey Boy Smith at all because I actually really liked him, but you know, it's funny now that there's so many British guys who are much better in the ring than the Bulldog was, but the Bulldog just had this thing where, you know, he was, the Union Jack had been vomited all over him, and he was, you know, he was Mr. UK, Mr. Britain, and all that sort of stuff. What I think is interesting, though, is, and maybe this is something that's more realistic if they decided to go this route, because obviously last weekend there was the monumental sporting event that was Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather having the kind of, you know, the boxing match, which, to be fair, you know, for anyone who doesn't like Conor McGregor, and that's fine, I mean, the fact that he went in there and went 10 rounds with Floyd Mayweather, I think, is astounding. And, you know, he should be congratulated for that forevermore, because he went into a sport that he'd never done before and lasted that long, you know? And I think if you put the shoe in the other foot, you put Floyd Mayweather in an octagon, it would have been a very different story. But
Yeah, absolutely.
But what I noticed from, like, because when I was living in Canada for a year between 2014 and 2015, and I remember going to an Irish bar to watch a Conor McGregor fight, and, like, the bar, you could not get, I mean, we were in the bar about 8 o'clock West Coast time, and Conor's fight started about 10. But by the time it got to his fight time, you couldn't even get in the pub. Like, people could not get in. And, like, there's such an Irish kind of, like, they get behind Conor McGregor so much that I almost feel like maybe it's not out with the realms of possibility if WWE were to push it, to have one of their Irish talents become so big that they can do a big Irish show. Because what I've noticed from Conor, whether it's me living in Vancouver and, you know, seeing people paying $3,000 to go and see Conor in Vegas, or, you know, or even now, you know, going to see him face Floyd, is that Irish people want to get behind an Irish athlete. They really want to get behind them. And I think that that's a market, whether it's a Finn Balor or maybe even a Sheamus, because I know Sheamus has done, you know, he did a BBC documentary a couple of years ago with, I think it was Angela, oh, I can't remember her surname, but it was like a documentary following him around in WWE. I think maybe Ireland would now be the place to focus that kind of stuff, because I feel like they're more, not more patriotic, but I think they're looking for that more than maybe the UK is.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's tough to, I mean, it's always, it's sometimes it's tough to explain why somebody becomes so big. And McGregor is obviously, you know, one of the most famous sportsmen in the world, at least this week anyway. I mean, you know, as you say, I mean, for him to last 10 rounds with Floyd Mayweather, I mean, no one believed that he was going to last that long. Everyone was like, oh, it'll last, he'll never lay a glove on Mayweather, it'll last one round, two rounds, and then it'll be over, he'll be humiliated. And, you know, he proved the naysayers wrong, he made them eat their words. And to the credit of a lot of boxing pundits and people in the boxing world, they did congratulate him on his performance, so good on them for admitting that they were wrong. So that was nice to see. But sometimes it's, you know, you've got a guy, why is, and yet it's sometimes very difficult to explain why somebody becomes so big. And it was the same with Smith. Why did Davey Boy Smith become such a star? And he wasn't particularly charismatic. I mean, I think he was a really good performer. I mean, by 91, when it really got huge for him, 92, when it peaked with SummerSlam, he was really feeling the effects. His back was in a mess. He was having a lot of knee problems. As Bret Hart revealed years later in his autobiography, Hitman, Davey was a real mess when it came to drugs. He was taking, you know, a lot of pills, and partly because he was physically so run down, also wrecked from his years of bumps. But I mean, why did Smith become that big? Maybe partly it was his pedigree. You know, he'd started on the British circuit, gone to Stampede, become a star in Japan. You know, he'd held the WWF tag team title with Dynamite Kid. So maybe it was a pedigree thing. And sometimes that can be the reason why you become so massive, because you've got that background and you are already, in a sense, a legend. And maybe that's the reason why a lot of the Brits today won't be viewed in those terms, because they don't have that pedigree that Smith had. I'm not sure. I think it was a lot of things that made Davey so big. I think it was the WWF wrestling craze that was so enormous in 91, 92. I think that fueled it as well. And we'll never see that again over here. I mean, and I'm glad, because wrestling has really, since 97 when it came back up, really 93 was when it started dropping off over here, 94, 95, 96 started coming back up, as WWF did behind Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels. And then 97 was when WWF really started getting its act together and it started coming back up again in popularity. And ever since then, WWF, WWE wrestling has maintained a good level of popularity over here. So I wouldn't want that craze to come back, because a craze, you know, by definition, you know, burns very brightly and then burns out. And we don't want that again. We'd rather have we'd rather have stability, wouldn't we, Kenny, rather than, you know, this huge, you know, boom and bust type wrestling thing.
Yeah, and it's funny as well, because, like, you would never have thought, if you watched SummerSlam 92 and you watched that, you know, so for any American listeners who are listening to this, like, go and watch it on the network. I assume the network is the Bulldog Bret main event. I would assume that's what they've got on the network. But go and watch that match, and go and watch the finish and the reaction to the crowd. It's almost unfathomable to think that 6 months later, British Bulldog would not even be in the WWF.
Yeah, it wasn't even 6 months, Kenny. He was fired before Survivor Series.
Yeah, so, three months. And then by February, he was in WCW, you know?
That's right.
But there you go. So last week we did say we were going to touch on some injuries for WWE. So let's go from the ones from last week. Big Cass was injured during a match with Enzo, a street fight that seemed to never end. And it took a 9-month injury for Cass to put us out of our misery.
Yeah.
So Cass goes, he's getting toppled to the outside by Enzo. He lands awkwardly on his leg. And, you know, he tries to finish the match, tries to go straight to the finish, but he just can't do it. So he ends up limping to the outside, and they give Enzo the kind of, you know, by forfeit victory, or by injury victory or something.
Yeah.
So he's had surgery, and he's now out for 6 to 9 months. I feel bad for the guy, because I feel like if he'd managed to get past the Enzo thing, it'd have been good to see what he had or what he could offer. But, yeah. It's sad to hear any time where somebody gets an injury that bad.
Absolutely. I mean, it was a very strange thing. I mean, that whole Enzo and Cass feud was just bizarre. I mean, the SummerSlam match, when Enzo climbs out of the cage and they made, you know, such a meal of him, you know, oiling himself up so he could squeeze through the bars, drops down, and then just walks straight into a boot from Cass. And it was just like, what was that? And Enzo was just humiliated again and again and again in that feud. And like, wow, they're having yet another match the night after SummerSlam. And then Cass does himself in, does his knee in, and then Enzo wins. And it was just such a curious thing. So he scores this accidental victory, the reward for which is demotion to 205 Live. Just all very curious. I mean, I noticed on Raw this week, Kenny, that Enzo, okay, maybe it was because he was in Memphis, I don't know, but Enzo's crowd reaction on Raw this week was, I've never seen a crowd quieter for his pre-match spiel. Just really feels like maybe the audience has thought, oh, this guy's now on 205 Live, that's all he's good for. Why are we cheering for him? This guy's a loser. I really felt like Enzo had flattened out massively on this week's Raw, which, ironically, was the week after he finally scored a victory over Cass.
I mean, when we say victory, it was the most hollow of victories, wasn't it? But, like, I guess the mindset they've got is that, you know, if Enzo goes to the Cruiserweight division, maybe he can elevate it. Or, I guess, the opposite effect is what you're saying, is people are going to be like, oh, no, he's in the Cruiserweight division now.
I mean, the reaction, you must have seen it, Ken. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very noticeable to me, the difference.
But I think part of it is actually to do with his act. Like, part of it is definitely to do with the fact that he's on 205 Live, because that division is dead as a doornail. But I think part of it is also, like, if you look at the way his character's been presented, he's an absolute chump.
Like
that thing at SummerSlam where he kills the shark cage gimmick dead by you know, baby oiling himself out of the cage. And then I remember when he got out of the cage, I'm thinking, all right, what's he going to do? Is he going to maybe just, like, is he valiantly going to just jump onto Cass and try and cause him some pain? But no, he just shuffles around and then dangles. And as Cass just looks at him like he's an idiot, and then he drops and gets kicked in the face, and you go, I mean, you're just an idiot.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird. The whole portrayal, we'll probably get to this a little bit later when we talk about Raw and SmackDown, but the whole portrayal of babyfaces in WWE raises a lot of questions. A lot of alarm bells are going off at the moment, Kenny, but, you know, we'll get to that a little bit later.
we'll get to them. But also last week, Asuka, after she defeated Ember Moon at TakeOver Brooklyn 3, she'd broke a collarbone. She had a great tweet where she just wrote, "One victory for one bone," which was quite fun. And then there was big speculation, you know, she's out 6 to 8 weeks, what's going to happen, where's she going to go, and she ended up relinquishing the NXT Women's Championship on the tapings. Now, before you have a go and, like, start tweeting and saying you've spoiled NXT, WWE tweeted this themselves, they've released the information, so we're not spoiling anything, but she's relinquished the championship. It's been announced that she is negotiating with Raw and SmackDown. And I'm presuming she'll make a main roster. Now, I've heard where I think she's going, but we won't give it away here. But she's going to turn up another Raw or SmackDown probably before Survivor Series. So what did you make of the decision to have her, you know, relinquish the belt on NXT, get a big farewell ceremony, and take her undefeated streak to the main roster?
I mean, at first I thought, oh, why have they done that? But I think, you know, a week later or 6 days later, after learning of of what happened and seeing the footage, I thought the footage was so well done. And it really felt like a huge moment in her career. And I've come round to the idea now, and I like it. You know, my initial reaction was like, "Ooh, you could have left the title on her because it's only 6 to 8 weeks. You could come back and then drop it to her worthy successor." But you know, we've been through it before. Who would have been her worthy? Would there have been a worthy successor? Would it have felt? Was there somebody who was at the level that they could have feasibly defeated her, or you know, believably defeated her for the title?
Yeah.
And that was an uncertain, probably not. So in a sense, maybe this is the perfect way for her to lose the title, or by relinquishing it, and then going to the main roster as the undefeated NXT Women's Champion. So yeah, I actually now looking at it, I think it was very well done, very well handled. And I'm hoping that this will be used to promote her when she arrives on Raw or SmackDown. So I'm hoping that this is a big part of what happens next. And she's, you know, very well looked after on the main roster. So yeah, I like it, Kenny. What do you think of it?
You know, I do like it. I think that the thing is, I don't think there is anybody in NXT right now who would have a realistic shot at beating her right now. For those of you, again, there's so many things you don't want to spoil, so you don't talk about it. I know who's in the finals of the Mae Young Classic, and I'm not going to say who it is, but I feel like either of the people in that final could have been someone that would have been, you know, a good contender for Asuka, but then, you know, timing, isn't it? It's like Asuka's waiting to leave,
yeah,
and other people are waiting to come in, and it's like... The thing that NXT's done in the last couple of years sometimes, I think it's been problematic, Bayley's probably the best example, is leaving people in limbo for a while. And it feels like Asuka's not being left in limbo. It feels like she's being promoted, you know, yeah. and she's conquered NXT. She still has that undefeated streak. And wherever she goes, you know, she goes to SmackDown, you've got the Charlotte and Becky matches to be had. If she goes to Raw, you've got the Sasha match, the Alexa match to another extent, Bayley when she comes back. Because I think there's a lot of good stuff that can come out of it. And I'm glad that she got the big farewell because she deserved it for just how good of a star she is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Xavier Woods got a knee injury over the weekend. He on SmackDown famously had a sign saying it's sore. He's kind of in the luckiest position of all the injuries, right? Because he's in this kind of three-man team where he can kind of just be on the side.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That works really well for him. As you say, he was on SmackDown this week with the trombone. So, presumably it's not that bad. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been there. So
yeah, so maybe just a tweak or something, just a few weeks. But and then the other one is Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe, who is heavily scheduled or rumoured. No, it was scheduled to be facing John Cena in the main event of Raw, injured his knee on Saturday night at a house show, and is going to be out for, I think, the maximum 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But it's funny, I actually think that it's a blessing in disguise for him, because...
Yeah, so do I.
had he been on Raw, he'd have been jobbing to John Cena. I was saying to my friend last night, Jamie, I was saying, isn't it funny that to get more over, you just need to not be on TV for a few weeks?
That's it, or just, you know, to be a lot of distance between you and John Cena.
Well, that goes for another Samoan that we'll get to, but I think as well, like, the thing with Samoa Joe is, you know, if we're getting that kind of blockbuster double main event at No Mercy, where we've got Strowman and Lesnar and Cena Reigns, like, I don't think it's a good idea to sort of job Samoa Joe out. So, you know, having a few weeks off, you know, I don't think that Raw's going to hurt with that. And I think that he's a strong enough character that when he comes back, it should hopefully just all fall back into place for him.
Yeah, definitely. And I think sometimes you can be, if you don't really have a key spot, then sometimes that can reflect badly on you, and you can be viewed as a lesser star than you are if you're not placed in a position that really matters. So sometimes I think it's better not to be there than to just be there and treading water. If you look at, you know, Finn Balor, I mean, I couldn't believe it on Raw this week, Kenny, when he was in the Battle Royal and then Bray Wyatt turned up and ejected him from the Battle Royal. And it's like, hang on a minute, I thought that feud was over. And it's like, oh,
bloody
it's
Bray
still
Wyatt.
Going. It's still going. I don't need to see these two guys wrestle again, but WWE has decided that they're going to.
I feel like Finn Balor's in this weird sort of limbo place where...
Exactly. That's what I mean, yeah.
Because they clearly like him. You know, you can tell by the presentation of him that they like him, they see something in him, but he's just kind of... It's one of those things where, you know, it's not his time right now. And Raw is so stacked with headliners. It really is. You know, you've got guys like The Miz who could at any point be elevated to main event and do really well. You've got, you know, Reigns, Strowman, Lesnar, Joe, Cena for whenever he's in. And then under that, you've got guys like Balor and Wyatt who are just kind of... I mean, Wyatt's just a sort of... You talk about Dolph Ziggler, talked about Finn Balor being a charisma vacuum. Bray Wyatt's a story vacuum.
Yeah.
You put him in a story and he just takes every bit of fun out of it. It's just, oh, I don't know how you fix that. Yeah. But anyway, so Samoa Joe, if it were up to you, do you think he should just miss No Mercy? Do you think they should just kind of like write him out of it or keep him out of it until he's fit and ready to come back?
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, what's he going to do that's going to be relevant, that's going to be big? And it seems like everybody, like, presumably it's going to be Finn Balor versus Bray Wyatt again, even though I don't want to see it again. I'm sure most people are not really that bothered if that match happens again or not. You look at the other matches that are already scheduled for it. I mean, how does he fit in? I don't really see a spot for him that really is meaningful. So, yeah, he would be better off coming back the night after No Mercy or the week after that or whenever he's ready.
Yeah, I think that's the most sensible option.
Yeah, and put him in somewhere that matters. I mean, maybe he can... I mean, I know they did wrestle in NXT a lot and to the point where I didn't really need to see them wrestle anymore, but they could do... It could be a Samoa Joe, Finn Balor feud on Raw. They could do that. I mean, I felt the feud in NXT lasted too long, but enough time has elapsed now where I think it could be revisited and the main roster fans... It hasn't happened on the main roster yet, so maybe they could do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about the Mae Young Classic. It has started now. And you've watched the first episode, I've watched the first couple. Just from the first episode, what did you think of the format and the layout and how it's going?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I felt that the crowd was a huge part of it. There's no beach balls bouncing around there. Kenny, no mech. The fans were so into the action. I mean, I felt that the fourth match of the first episode, I thought they're going to struggle a bit there. Abby Leith versus Jazzy Gabert, who was used to be Alpha Female. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, she was Alpha Female before. That's now, right. Now Jazzy Gabert.
Yeah, so, I mean, I felt that they were struggling a little bit after the previous match. But I thought, are they going to be able to get the crowd into it? And they did do. And by the end, I mean, it was a great finish, terrific reaction for the winner. I won't spoil who the winner is in case you haven't seen it. So, yeah, I enjoyed that. I thought all four matches were good in their own way. They were all different. I enjoyed the Shayna Baszler versus Zayda match. I thought that was very well done.
Oh, the finish to that match was incredible.
Yeah,
so
it was
good.
A very realistic match. Obviously, Shayna Baszler, she's the one of the four
horsewomen. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, and Ronda Rousey was shown at ringside. Can't say I'd fancy my chances in a real fight against Shayna, Kenny.
Not normie.
she looked a bit useful, didn't she?
She knew what she was doing.
I thought that match was really well done. I mean, that talking about a match that holds water. That was very believable, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Really, really good. I enjoyed the opening match with Kaylee Ray and Francesca Suhey, I think it's pronounced. I thought that was really good. I think Kaylee Ray, I'm not just saying it because she's Scottish, but I think that she showed a lot of fire. And I think that we'd definitely like to see more from her.
Yeah, so. I agree. Yeah, I thought it was... I mean, they were in the spot where they were opening it up, which is, you know, that's a big match. The first match is a big match. Some people think, oh, yeah, the curtain jerker or whatever, but that first match is a very important match on any show or series or whatever. I thought she was very impressive in there. I've seen her live a couple of times, and she was in the TNA's British Boot Camp 2, wasn't it? The second one she was in. Was it the second one?
I think it was the second one, yeah, because the first one was the one with the Blossom Twins. And
that's right, yeah, right.
If you want to look at how to fuck something up, Marty Scurll on TNA British Bootcamp, look what he is now, and they let him go, you know? If you look at it, here's the people that TNA had in the last 7 years. They had the Young Bucks. They had Okada. They had Marty Scurll. You go, come on. And I'm sure there was times where they could have made a beeline to sign guys like Kevin Owens.
They had Will Ospreay, didn't they? Was it, I think he did one match on the, when they did the 2016 yes. tapings?
Mm-hmm.
I think he did one match, and I think it was it a ladder match?
I think it is. It rings a bell.
Yeah, I did. I remember when I did the interview with Mark Dallas for the Power Slam Interviews Volume 1, we talked about it there. And, Will Ospreay was in the match and he was just barely in it. And like 6 months later, or actually not even 6 months later, because he had the famous match with Ricochet, didn't he, in the Best of Super Junior tournament in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was talking about Will Ospreay and he'd been this sort of like almost invisible guy, this anonymous figure for TNA, and it was just like, how could you screw this up, TNA? But, hey, where there's a will, there's a way.
It's almost impressive. You almost have to be impressed, almost.
That's it. It's like the reverse Midas touch, isn't it? It's like, it's like, wow, you've managed to screw it up again. Incredible. But, clearly she did the stuff with TNA, and she's done a lot of different things over here, as you know, Kenny. And, I thought she was very impressive as well. I enjoyed that match. Serena Deeb, great to see her back in the WWE system. They had to admit that she was irresponsible with alcohol in 2010 when she was part of the Straight Edge Society, ironically, and she lost a job. So it was great to see her back in the system. I thought she looked really good.
I don't know how many episodes people have watched, but I did just want to say one thing, because I have watched it. You know, there's the match with Abby Laith and Jazzy Gabert, as we talked about, and I was just gobsmacked that Abby Laith went through over Jazzy, because I just thought Jazzy, like, she had this... I don't know how to describe it. I think it's just she had this kind of monster quality to her that I really enjoyed. And, it took three quarters of the match to even get her off her feet. And I thought it was building to her going through. But from what I've heard, she's the person that the fans at Full Sail actually really got behind. And she does I think during one of the following rounds, she's in like a multi-woman match.
Right.
And the audience apparently really get behind her. So... I think the good thing about this tournament is that there's at least a dozen women that they should sign and could be on the main roster over some of the dross that are on there right now, Tamina.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of female performers in WWE who have really been there for a long time. And it's just like, I've been a fan of Emma in the past. I don't really know. I think she's lost her confidence, but I'm not really sure what role she plays anymore. And I'd much rather see one of these newcomers in there rather than her. I don't think she's ever going to really contribute much to the WWE. I just don't see it. So why not get someone in there who can?
Yeah, and I think the thing with Emma is Emma obviously had that gimmick that they gave her that she decided she didn't want to do, and that's going to go against her. And I know people who like Emma are going to be upset about that, but it's the name of the game. If you don't want to do the job, somebody else is going to do it. And as crap in the ring as Lana is, Lana's on SmackDown every single week trying with that gimmick.
Yeah,
and I think that whether it works or not, they will be behind her because she gave it a chance.
Yeah, absolutely.
She gave it a go. So
I just want to mention one thing. We were talking about people that TNA had. And screwed up. They had Alpha Female very briefly on one tour as well. Do you remember that? She was on when they were overtaping TV in the UK.
Yeah, and I vaguely remember they had her, yeah.
Yeah, they had Velvet Sky pin her clean. I'm sure about that. And I remember writing something about it in Power Slam at the time and just being like, what? And it was just like, oh, no. And it was just like, Velvet Sky pinning Alpha Female? Come on.
It's at least it's now Global Force Wrestling, and we don't need to worry about those creative decisions anymore.
That's right. It's a new day and everything's all changed. It's all shiny and new. Actually, can I just quickly mention the Gauntlet for the Gold on last week's Impact? I would like to put that over.
Sure.
GFW some credit. I thought the final five, it was a really good selection of people. They had Johnny Impact, who was John Hennigan, formerly John Morrison. He was one of the final five. Moose was in there. Lashley was in there. Eddie Edwards was in there. And Eli Drake won, as we mentioned last week. And really enjoyed the match. Thought it had a really hot finish. If you haven't seen it, I would recommend you watch at least the last half of it. So, pretty good match. Pretty damn good match. And I'm excited to see what Drake does as champion.
Yeah, but a lot of people are talking about, I mean, people who don't watch TNA are kind of talking about, you know, Drake is one of the guys that, you know, is really good, so we'll see. Yeah. How's Jim Cornette doing as the on-screen authority figure?
Yeah, I think he did well. I mean, he's really good on TV. I think he was probably featured at least one time too many. So it was almost like the Jim Cornette show. So, if you're listening, Jim, you know, don't cut a promo on me. Don't put me on your list. You know, but I thought you were good, but I could have probably just done with seeing a little bit less of you.
And he did say in his podcast that he doesn't want to be sort of the TV character. So maybe it's just kind of using him a lot to begin with and then scaling it back. So I guess we should talk about the WWE shows of this week. Raw first. Obviously on Raw we had the build towards a few things. We had the build towards the Intercontinental Championship next week. We had the build towards Lesnar and Strowman and the build towards Roman Reigns and John Cena. So first of all, Jeff Hardy wins a Battle Royal to get the right to face The Miz next week for the IC title. What did you make of Jeff Hardy getting this solo opportunity?
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. I thought Jason Jordan was going to win. And I think they wanted us to think that. So I thought it was a really hot battle royal, apart from when Bray Wyatt ejected Finn Balor.
What was your reaction? So you're watching it and the lights go out and Bray Wyatt eliminates him. Was there an audible groan or was there just a rolling of the eyes?
just the rolling of the eyes, Kenny. It didn't really go beyond that. one thing I've never been able to work out about, I've often thought that WWE is missing a trick. They need to put out an official WWE wrestling or WWE sports entertainment rule book. You know, and they could do it as like a comedy thing, you know. And I think they could have a lot of fun with that. But one thing that I've never been able to understand, and maybe if they ever publish this rule book, they'll be able to help me out, is how somebody who's not an official entrant in a match can eliminate somebody who is an official entrant in the match. And as far as I could work out, Bray Wyatt wasn't officially in that match.
Yeah, it's baffling. But do you know what? I am here to save the day for you.
Right.
Because this past February, the WWE released the official WWE Book of Rules.
Oh, did they? Oh, wow.
And how to break
that.
So maybe that should be our secret Santa for the year, the Power Slam podcast. I'll buy you the official WWE Book of Rules. And then when we're doing a podcast and I'm arguing a case, you can just come at me with a random rule that they've got in page 96 that I didn't know they had.
Right. Well, I apologise. That one just completely bypassed me.
So you, when we were talking about it, I was like, I'm sure I heard something about it, but I couldn't remember if they released it. So I just did a quick Google while we were talking there. So it's the official book of WWE rules and how to break them. So Bray Wyatt jumped on Amazon and he must have just read the rule book.
He must have done, yeah.
But he did come in and break it up, sadly.
Yeah. So Finn Balor was eliminated by Bray Wyatt, and so he didn't win, and it was Jeff Hardy who did. I mean, it was a very popular outcome. I thought it was a really hot match. I mean, these battle royals usually are, especially when there's something at stake. I mean, let's face it, these days they don't do them for no reason. Once upon a time, the battle royal would be something they would just do when they ran out of ideas. But now they only ever do a battle royal when it's actually for a purpose and something will go to the winner. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Jeff Hardy can do with The Miz. I think they'll have a good match. I think it'll be a lot of fun. You know, it'd be, it does start, kind of strike me as a different direction for them, because I kind of thought Jason Jordan and Miz, I thought that feud was going to continue. Maybe that's not going to happen now, and maybe it's going to be Jeff Hardy and Miz for a while, and Jeff and Matt versus Miz and the Miztourage. Maybe that's the thing that's going to keep them all occupied for the next sort of four to six weeks. So I enjoyed the match. Yeah, as I said, didn't see it coming. What did you think of it, Kenny?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I think it's interesting that Jeff Hardy is the number one contender, because I still get the feeling that we're building towards Miz and Jordan. So I'm kind of intrigued as to how they're going to not have Jeff Hardy win next week. You know, is it going to be something with Matt? Is it going to be something with another tag team? Is it going to be something to do with the Miztourage? I just can't see him winning the belt next week.
No, I can't either. And I think Miz has got... I think Miz as champion is, you know, solid gold. I mean, Miz without the title, I think he needs a title to really give him that sort of motivation to cut those promos that he cuts. And I like him as champion. And if he's, you know, that's what the Miztourage is there for, to ensure that he remains champion. So I don't think Hardy's going to win it. And if he does, it'll probably just be a very short title reign. But I would think that, you know, that Miz is going to retain. But they did promote the match quite heavily on Raw, and I think on SmackDown as well. So I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be put in either end of hour one, two. I don't know if it'll be the main event, but it'll be one of the main matches on the show next week. So I think they'll give it a lot of time, and I think it'll be a good match. Looking forward to it.
So then we go from there. We've got the build towards Braun and Brock. We have Paul Heyman cutting a promo, and in the end, Brock Lesnar grabs the mic and says what he's trying to say is Suplex City, bitch. And I guess they're trying to keep these guys apart a little bit before they combust in LA at the Staples Center for No Mercy. What did you think of the promo this week and Lesnar grabbing the mic?
Yeah, always great to see or hear Lesnar doing a promo. I think he should talk more than he does. I mean, I realised that if he did all the talking, then Paul Heyman would be redundant. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Lesnar as a promo guy. I'd like to see him talk more, and looking forward to this match. You know, we talked about it a lot last week, Kenny. Yeah, I mean, they're definitely keeping him apart, which is smart, because you can only do so many of those sort of beatdown angles. I mean, presumably Lesnar at some point is going to give Strowman the F5, or maybe they'll save that for the pay-per-view. I'm not sure. But they're probably better off keeping him apart. I mean, it's still a few weeks yet until No Mercy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't want to... I think they looked at last week's angle and they're like, right, this is hot. You know, we don't want to overexpose these two guys. Let's just keep it simmering. And then the week before, I think they'll probably have a big brawl. And then that'll be like, wow, people will be like on the edge of the seats for the match September 24th. So, yeah, what did you think of it, Kenny?
Yeah, I like keeping them apart, you know, because Braun's obviously showed his strength twice in a row, you know, SummerSlam and 24 Hours Later, so you don't really want to have them continuously physically getting to each other. So I like the idea of, you know, keeping Braun off TV meant that, you know, if Braun was there, why would Braun have just sat and listened to that? Braun would have absolutely came out and just attempted to murder Brock Lesnar. So I thought that was good.
It's hard for me to imagine Strowman as champion. I just can't see him beating Lesnar, even though he's been portrayed as this guy who's this biggest ever threat to Lesnar's reign, or at least this reign. It's hard for me to imagine Strowman as champion, but I think it would be an amazing moment if he did beat Lesnar.
It would be one of the most shocking moments of the year, I think, if it happened. But so when I was watching Ross, and I was I'm sitting watching the show. And then they have the contract signing for John Cena and Roman Reigns. And I sit and I watch this whole promo, and my first thought as soon as it finished was, I cannot wait to hear what Finn has to say about this. So, so Roman Reigns comes out, John Cena's there, they have this back and forth, there's shit comments all over the place, Roman Reigns is telling John Cena that he sucks, and that he's a part-time bitch. John Cena's telling him he doesn't know how to cut a promo, and you know, Cena's not the Undertaker, he's not a battered veteran at the end of his career with a bad hip.
Yeah.
A very, very strange promo, but talk me through your thoughts on the whole thing and how both guys did on the mic with this.
I mean, I found it to be quite a strange segment, Kenny. I mean, it was like they were dispatched to bury each other. You know, this was not one of those segments where they were building each other up. They were just basically tearing each other down. And it's very doubly curious for me. 1 week after Cena's performance last week on Raw, and I was pretty tough on Cena in last week's podcast, Kenny. I think that's fair to say, isn't it?
You were tough on him. I mean, I think you've got more ammunition to be tough on him this week.
I don't think I was tough enough. That was last week. I think he deserved far worse than what he got from me last week. I thought that was appalling the way he behaved last week. Absolutely appalling. It's like he just did a giant piss on the business. That's what he did last week, in my opinion. It was just like...
It felt like he took a giant shit on it this week, so...
But he was just like, wow, you know, this is this business that you profess to love so much, and you're out there just clowning around. This week, it was the polar opposite. There was really no clowning. There was a little bit of the John Cena, smiling and chuckling when Reigns is cutting him down, but mostly he was pretty serious. So I'm getting the feeling that Cena did, he must have enough self-awareness to know that his conduct last week did not go down very well in many circles. He must be aware of that. So it was much more serious this week. But really, for him to say some of the things he did and come across as this great defender of the business, 1 week after that performance on Raw, and 8 days after that performance against Baron Corbin at SummerSlam, it was very difficult for me to really back him. Even though some of the things he was saying about Reigns were true, undeniably, it was like, Cena, you're such a hypocrite, really? I mean, the first thing he should have done when he came out that week was apologise for his performance the previous week. Of course, he wasn't going to do that. But if he really had any respect for the business, that's what he should have done. You know, perhaps I don't think he should apologise every week for the rest of his career. So let's get to the segment. So I've said that piece about Cena. All that aside, right? So Cena refers to Reigns as a cheap-ass, corporately created John Cena bootleg. Well, John Cena is as much of a corporate creation as there's ever been, when he stood out there in his vomit-inducing merchandise. So that's another thing about Cena, and this is another thing that's really held him back, I think, from gaining acceptance from more people over the years, Kenny. He said he's just this walking merchandise advert, and I understand that most wrestlers are to some extent, but not to the extent of John Cena.
Also, it's bad merchandise.
Exactly.
who in the holy fuck is going to walk around as an adult, unless you're going on some sort of bus, with a John Cena baseball cap on, a John Cena t-shirt, and John Cena wristbands? I mean, it's a walking advert to never get laid in your life.
I mean, when the Rock came back in 2011, it was like shooting fish in a barrel, wasn't it? You know, when he was there saying he looks like Barney the Dinosaur's, you know, the offspring of Barney the Dinosaur.
Just like he's been propelled out of Barney the Dinosaur's anus.
far worse than Barney the Dinosaur's offspring. Then. So I mean. But he was, you know, and then he made the Fruity Pebbles comments, and of course Cena and WWE ended up getting the Fruity Pebbles sponsorship gig out of that, just to rub salt in the wounds of everyone who can't stand Cena. So he's out there in that merchandise. It's very hard to take him seriously, and that's been the case all along. When he wears this stuff in these very bright colours, these Dayglow colours, which are designed to appeal to small children, which is, you know, people who buy the merchandise, or, you know, a big portion of his audience is very young, who wears his merchandise. I mean, let's face it, if you're walking around with that as an adult, you're probably going to get your head kicked in, aren't you, really, Kenny? You know what I mean? So again, you've got to kind of put that to one side. Now, I thought this segment was very realistic. I thought it was well done in many respects. My lingering memory of it, unfortunately, was when Reigns lost his train of thought. And then Cena pointed out that Reigns had lost his train of thought and forgotten his lines. Now, Cena had just been talking about, I don't bury people. You know, I'm not the guy with the shovel. I don't have the power to do this. Then he's saying it's the audience who decides who gets over and who's the star and who isn't. And then Reigns had that moment where he forgot his lines and Cena just couldn't help himself. And he had to point that out. So he basically buried Reigns for forgetting his lines. So it was just that John Cena, the hypocrisy. It was just pouring out of the TV, Kenny. Pouring out of the TV at this moment. So he's going about the mythical golden shovel. And then he just buried Reigns for forgetting his lines. Now, you could say, well, Reigns shouldn't have forgotten his lines. Reigns deserved that. But they were nailing each other really hard as it was. And to me, a real pro would have covered for that. Wouldn't have magnified Reigns' blunder. And some people would say, well, Reigns deserves it. And at that level, he shouldn't be forgetting his lines. And I absolutely do understand that. But Cena didn't have to draw our attention to the fact that Reigns had forgotten his lines. That was about the only thing in it, put aside all the things I've just complained about. That was in the actual context of the segment itself. If you clear away everything that led up to that, that kind of annoyed me. I thought it was very well done. I thought it was very realistic, even though all they did was trash each other. But most importantly, all that really matters is that this has definitely created more interest for their match at No Mercy. That was the goal of this segment. And it achieved that with flying colours, so full marks.
It did achieve that with flying colours, and I definitely want to see it, but I can't help but think that they've put a plaster over the wound, and they've not actually healed the wound. Because if the objective of Roman Reigns is for him to be the top guy and a babyface, etc., and they want him to beat Brock Lesnar in New Orleans at WrestleMania, I just thought this was awful for Roman Reigns. Like, I felt sorry for Roman Reigns at the end of this. Like, because Roman Reigns, the difference between Roman Reigns and John Cena is that John Cena did bury a lot of talent. Wade Barrett, Rusev, Kevin Owens,
Baron Corbin.
There's a lot of people. I mean, there's Dolph Ziggler, Bray Wyatt, blah, blah, blah.
Goes on and on.
Roman Reigns has not buried one person.
No.
Zero. Part of the reason that Braun Strowman is as big a deal as he is because of Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns had a help in Samoa Joe. Roman Reigns had a help in propelling AJ Styles. All Roman Reigns, Finn Balor, he took a clean loss to him when he debuted on Raw last July. Roman Reigns has done a lot to help other performers. And I think that the thing that kind of left a sour taste in my mouth was, and I'm not a Roman Reigns fan as the character of Roman Reigns, but I only imagine if you're in the WWE locker room, you must have just looked at Cena here and thought, you hypocritical piece of shit.
Yeah.
Because you go away and you go part-time and you do everything that you gave The Rock shit for before.
Yeah.
And now you come back and you just say all that stuff about Roman Reigns. And if John Cena was as big a company man and all that as he says he is, he would have turned around and said, do you know what? The lines here are too good for me. Let's give Roman something else.
Yeah. I mean, there was a line there where Cena said to Reigns, I can do this part-time better than you can ever do it full-time. That was one of Cena's lines.
Yeah, like, I'm only here part-time because you can't do your job.
Yeah. And, Reigns had said, you can't bury me, John. And then Cena said, it took you 5 years to cut a halfway decent promo, but now I'm about to shrink you down to size. And this is from, that Cena said that, of course. And this was after Cena saying,
like there was any doubt after, if they said that.
This was after Cena had said that he doesn't bury people. And it's just, but I mean, this is Cena for you. I mean, people talk about him as being this incredible promo guy. And yeah, he does have good delivery and everything. But if you listen to most of his promos, he very rarely makes any sense at all.
I do think here that he cut an incredible promo. I thought him and Reigns were both tremendous here. And I think that this is a segment that we will be talking about for years to come. The problem with the segment is that I think at the end of it, you come out of it the exact same way. It's the exact same thing they did with the... So when The Rock came back, I was one of the people that hated John Cena. Hated the character. Could not stand him. And The Rock came back and pointed out every single flaw that he had. And then he beat him. at WrestleMania 28. Now, don't get me wrong. I was there. I was getting my tits out. I was happy. Could not have been happier when John Cena was beat at WrestleMania 28. But it was the wrong decision. It should have been a one-match program that John Cena won, and John Cena proved that he was actually better than this guy who was coming back and saying that he was terrible. You know, we've gone from the iconic Austin 316 to, you can't see me. You know, that was the promo. And now what John Cena's doing is the exact same thing that The Rock did, which is he's coming back and going, look at you. You're rubbish. You know, you full-time, you can't even do what I can do part-time. Now, if this all leads to No Mercy, where Roman Reigns beats John Cena clean and we move on, okay, fair enough. But that has to be the finish. Because if that's not the finish, and he comes back to do exactly what you're going to find is post-No Mercy, Roman Reigns is going to be in just character purgatory. And he's going to find it so difficult to get back because he was already struggling as it is. And then, you know, this I feel like this last month and a half, like he was doing really good work and he was doing stuff with Joe and Lesnar and Strowman. And then you get, you know, big fucking Barney the Dinosaur comes back and just goes, here's why you're rubbish.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I mean, all that is absolutely correct, Kenny. I mean, when I was saying full marks, my point was it's done more to, it's done something to create interest in this match. And I think people are now more motivated to watch this match than they were before Monday.
Yeah, 100%.
That's what I said for Max. So that is the goal of the promo, is to create interest in a match. And it did do that. But I mean, as I said earlier, all they did was trash each other. Neither one built the other one up at all. And it's just like, wow, these two guys are like, you know, the two faces of the company, the two biggest sort of stars. You can't call Cena a full-timer anymore. Obviously, Lesnar's a big star and everything, but two of the biggest stars anyway. And there was no compliments exchanged at all. It was just all derogatory. Mm-hmm. So it was a very curious segment, I felt. And a lot of the things that were said in it just simply, you know, was simply like, you know, Cena was just being a hypocrite and stuff he was saying was just simply not true. And then you had that strange moment where Reigns lost his train of thought and couldn't remember his lines, and there's a pause, and Cena then draws our attention to it, which kind of added to the realism.
I also thought just very quickly there that I think if you watch the segment back, that Roman Reigns actually is a more clear performer than John Cena, because Roman Reigns comes out there as that character and he stays that character throughout the whole promo. He's pissed off, he's angry, he's baffled that John Cena's doing this. Whereas John Cena goes from jumping up and down excited to serious to happy to sad to angry. You know, he does all, he's bipolar.
Yeah.
And then later on they do the tag match, and at the end of the tag match, Cena's giving him a clap. Well done.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, I thought it was, apart from the moment when Reigns forgot his lines, I thought it was easily Reigns' best ever verbal performance.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were moments there where I thought, wow, this guy's really showing me something here. He really seems like he's, you know, he's invested in this promo and believes in it, which perhaps he did.
And do you know what it said to me was, if this program was right, John Cena should be the heel here. And then Roman Reigns should be the babyface, because
he's the younger guy who's sticking around, isn't he?
Yeah, and you know, if you're one of the people listening to this who used to be exactly like I was and, you know, criticise John Cena, then getting behind him now just means that you're doing the exact same thing to somebody else. You know, John Cena's doing exactly what The Rock did to him, only the difference is that Roman Reigns is not at the level that John Cena was in 2011. You know, he's not that seasoned a performer. Because at that point, you know, John Cena in 2011 had been in the wrestling business for 11 years. Roman Reigns has been in the wrestling business for about 6 or 7, I want to say. 8 or 9, something like that. But not as long in a high-profile spot.
I mean, 2005 was when Cena was given the title. So he'd been champion on and off for 6 years by the time The Rock came back. Reigns has really been pushed as a top guy for, what, we're coming up 2.5, coming up to 3 years now?
Mm-hmm.
I guess, so you're right. So Cena's definitely got that, you know, at least twice as long in a main event position as Reigns is.
But it was an electric segment, and you know, just great. And I think that I can't imagine anybody's going to be indifferent now about watching that match.
No, definitely not. I mean, it was when Luke Gallows and Kyle Anderson came out. I mean, it was kind of a real disappointment, wasn't it? And then we had this really quite a feeble match. And you're like, and then Cena's there doing his thing. You're like, wow, you know, all the wins, all that's just been knocked out of your sails because you've had this sort of kind of realistic segment, and now we've got to this typical Cena match, and you're like, oof, you know. So it was that I felt that they shouldn't have had the match afterwards. I think they should have just ended it with the talk, and then maybe had like one more segment between them. The problem got now, Kenny, is that how are they going to top that? And they've still got a few weeks of TV to fill up. I don't think they should even try and top that segment, because if they do, I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I don't think, and also now no one's going to believe it. I think there's a lot of people out there that think, oh, wow, they were shooting. It was real. Oh, you know, and if they do it again, people will be like, oh, it's just another promo. So it's going to be interesting to see how they follow it up and maintain that level of sort of, I'm not sure if it's, I don't think it got quite the level of interest of the original CM Punk work shoot promo in June of 2011, it would have been, wouldn't it? 2011, that's right. But I mean, that was because that was something that we hadn't seen before in WWE. Or if we had, it'd be hard to really, I don't think we'd ever seen anything like that before in WWE. So, I mean, that was huge at the time. And I don't think this is quite as big as that, but it's still huge in its own way. So it's going to be interesting to see how they follow it up. Hopefully they don't try and replicate it next week. Otherwise it will, I think they'll kind of ruined the, you know, ruined the moment, you know, ruined the novelty of it.
And in terms of SmackDown, anything on that show you want to talk about from this week?
Can I just mention a couple of other things from Raw?
This is what most people are doing. They want to talk about Raw over SmackDown.
Yeah. I mean, I said last week that I felt that it was too soon for Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose to win the tag team title from Cesaro and Sheamus. And I really feel that was borne out this week on Raw. I felt their matches, it was Cesaro versus Rollins and then Sheamus versus Ambrose. And I just felt like the feud just had run out of steam. People just really weren't that interested at all in their matches. And I just think they absolutely blew it putting the title on Rollins and Ambrose when they did. I think if they put it on them at No Mercy, I think the reaction to it would be very different. It just kind of feels like they're trying to prolong a feud that's, you know, run out of energy. So I thought that was not disappointing because, I kind of expected it. But you know, I just think, wow, where's this going? Are they going to have another match? I don't really feel like I need to see another match between these guys. Another thing I want to mention, I said something earlier about how WWE portrays its baby faces. And I felt in the main event, they treated Sasha Banks really badly, Kenny. They had Alexa Bliss saying that Sasha Banks couldn't retain the title. And she said, I'm going to expose the legit boss as a legit loser. And then she went and did exactly that. And it was like a clean finish as well. So I felt if Sasha Banks is in a bad mood right now, Kenny, I absolutely understand why. What did you think of that match?
Yeah, I'm just kind of baffled as to why she won the title, to be honest. It feels like, do they just want Bayley and Sasha to just start again? Because they seem to really be knocking them down.
Yeah.
To build them back up. I don't really get it. And I think my fear is that, you know, I really like Nia Jax and I really like Alexa Bliss, but I don't know if together they're strong enough to pull out a strong program together. Yeah. And especially when, you know, you watch the Mae Young Classic and you think, you know, that the Kaylee Ray and Francesca Suhey match. Suhey, yeah. I thought that match was better than either main roster women's match on SummerSlam, to be honest. And I think that's where the difficulty is going to be. Is, you know, we're going to be watching this great women's tournament, and then in the main roster, I mean, is that what they're going to? So I'm hoping that maybe the injection of some of these Mae Young Classic women in the next few months can maybe help things. But I mean, I'm just not hugely hyped about Nia Jax Alexa Bliss feud, to be honest.
No, I'm absolutely with you there. It's like, who's going to... I mean, the thing is, because Bliss, in a sense, was almost portrayed as a babyface, because she said that she was going to win and then did, there was like a huge cheer for her after she defeated Banks. Now, Bliss is such a great heel that can they... I don't think they should turn a babyface, but then Nia Jax sort of did the swerve on her and dropped her in almost like an electric chair position after the match. Mm-hmm. So who's going to be the heel in this? Is it going to be Jax or is it going to be Bliss? Who are people going to side with? I guess it doesn't really matter as long as there's a reaction.
It's going to be harder to have a big, imposing babyface fight a small heel. Like,
that's right.
People are probably going to get behind Alexa.
Yeah. They probably are, I don't think they can. I mean, she's just dynamite as a heel. I mean, how can they turn her?
Yeah, I do just want to say, kind of, because we've got a few more things to talk about before we ride off. But on SmackDown, I was not impressed with this week's show at all. I thought it was. I enjoyed the Fashion Files as always, but I just think SmackDown's at the moment just this show that like it's completely missable. And that's the saddest thing you can say about it. It's not that it's bad, but it's just completely missable. And, you know, Orton versus Nakamura, and the winner gets him in a match. I mean, my God.
Hang on a minute, Kenny. None of you, especially you, Kenny, know what it's like to walk a mile in Jinder's shoes.
Oh, fuck off. Jinder fucking Mahal. He's so crap. Can he just cut one promo without losing his voice? Just one?
I mean, that opening promo, Kenny, they were just desperate for the fans to chant USA. You know, they had the Singh brothers there mentioning again and again the great nation of India. And finally, the fans did bite and they did chant USA. But it was so brief. And it was just like, what? It just felt like such a desperate segment to me.
But also, it's like the India thing's not even working. So now they've started bringing in the continent of Asia.
Yeah.
So now it's like, oh, well, maybe we're not getting enough network buys from India. Let's try Asia as a whole and see if that makes it any better.
I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe they're going to introduce a heel from North Korea, you know?
Actually, do you know what? That would be tremendous. Do that. Bring in a North Korean heel in it. I would probably be more willing to put up with it.
There's just no way they're going to go down that road again.
Can you imagine? Absolutely no way.
You know, I mean, the Muhammad Hassan in 2005. I think that was the end of that. I mean, the Jinder Mahal. You know, they go in for that cheap heat, but they're not really going all out like they did with Muhammad Hassan back in 2005. And I'm extremely grateful. I'm just kidding there about the North Korea thing. I don't want them to bring any kind of cheap heat heel like that in again. Thanks. That's, you know, that they should have left that behind in the 80s, you know.
Or 1991.
1991, yeah, with Sergeant Slaughter. I mean, that was bad enough.
What did you think? Because obviously SmackDown this week actually had a 9% dip in audience. On this week's show, so people are for some reason not tuning in. What did you think of the show just overall?
I thought it, you know, to me it passes by very quickly, doesn't it? Because you've had the 3-hour Raw. The Raw didn't really, there wasn't too many flat moments in Raw this week. I felt like Raw was overall a good show. I mean, SmackDown to me does pass by very quickly. I mean, there was quite a few matches on it that left you wondering why the hell they bothered booking them. I mean, Mike Kanellis turned up again, almost lasted 3 minutes against Bobby Roode. We had the AJ Styles Open Challenge. It was Ty Dillinger who came out, and Ty lost far too quickly to Styles. That was really to promote the Styles versus Corbin feud. What else was on the show? I mean, I thought the main event was pretty good. It was a, you know, Nakamura and Orton versus Rusev and Jinder Mahal. I mean, it was a shame to see Rusev do the job again, but I guess Mahal's champ and he couldn't, and they had to find a way, you know, the faces had to win if they were going to do the segment afterwards or the angle afterwards where Orton dropped Nakamura with the RKO. So it really had to end like that. I thought the show closing angle with Orton attacking Nakamura was a good little way of promoting their match next week. But it's really hard for me to imagine that Orton can win that match because we've just had Orton versus Mahal and they can't go back to it again. And, you know, as we said last week, or as I said last week, the way in which Nakamura lost to Mahal at SummerSlam, it kind of felt like the end of the feud. I didn't really feel like after that that he deserved another title match. And at least, you know, making him earn the title match. But it still doesn't feel like this Nakamura versus Mahal feud has got much energy left in it. It's got much juice left in it. I'm not excited about a rematch between those two, even if it is in Hell in a Cell. And it's hard for me to believe that Nakamura is going to beat Mahal. I think Mahal's going to retain the title for a while. It just doesn't feel like Nakamura's time. I mean, I said a long time ago, Kenny, that it was too soon for Nakamura to be chasing the title. And I just, to me, just doesn't, none of it's really sort of meshing right now, and none of it's really feeling like it's going to deliver fireworks. I don't mind SmackDown because it's a shorter show than Raw, and it passes by quite quickly, and there's usually enough on it that's entertaining. But there's nothing on there, as you say, it's missable. There's nothing on there that you absolutely must see.
I mean, first of all, I think you need to be very careful about your use of the word juice when you're talking about gender, but that's, you know, just an...
I have no idea what you mean, Kenny.
Good answer. covered yourself legally there. I thought Kevin Owens was really good in this week's episode. I'll give him that. I thought that his stuff was really good. And, like, I actually think Orton Nakamura is great. Like, I'd love to see that match. I can't bear what it's for. You know, it's like, how many Nakamura dream matches do we need to go through to get to another Nakamura gender match?
Yeah, Nakamura on, it just feels like thrown out there. Like it's just taking place. You know, let's get this out of the way because this is our destination. I mean, Nakamura Orton, the first match should be a Survivor Series main event that's been built up over a period of weeks or months, not just a throwaway match to entitle somebody to face him again.
Yep, 100% agree. So I guess just to close out this week, two things. Very quickly, The Undertaker is in the news. I know that Kane was on Jim Ross's podcast and asked if he'll wrestle again. He says that, this is what Kane said, he deserves, and I think he'll be able to do what he wants, and it's going to be up to him. And in the end, I think it'll be his decision of what the quality is. He's one of those guys that when you go and watch WrestleMania, it's like, does the guy ever age? And I think ultimately it'll be how he feels that will depend on his performance. I think this year he did age, but also PW Insider reported that at SummerSlam he was in fact there and he was actually in the ring working out. So I guess my question is, do you think if he does come back and do something, it could be this year, or do you think it would only be next year's WrestleMania? Because he has been brought up a lot as well in the kind of Cena Reigns promos.
Yeah, I mean, if The Undertaker does come back, I mean, what does that say about Roman Reigns? I mean, you know, that's been his, you know, badge of honour, I retired The Undertaker. So if The Undertaker's coming back, should he not be coming back to avenge his loss to Reigns? Should that not be the match?
I mean, I'd be willing to let that story go if it means I don't need to watch Reigns and Undertaker again.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't really want to watch the match again either, but the fact that Reigns has brought it up again and again, you know, I mean, okay, we had Cena mentioning that Undertaker was this washed up guy with a bad hip. So, I mean, possibly that could be used to set up a match between Cena and Undertaker, which was a match a lot of people wanted to see at this year's WrestleMania, including John Cena, as he pointed out on the air at least once.
During his program on this, yeah.
But it's like, you know, when he came back after he lost to Lesnar 2014, he'd come back, hadn't he, in 2015 for the match with, was it Bray Wyatt 2015?
Bray Wyatt, yeah.
Bray Wyatt. Then he did the SummerSlam that year and face Brock Lesnar, didn't he? So that was, you know, that was to avenge the loss to Lesnar. That was the whole purpose of that. So I don't really want to see him wrestle again, but maybe he's looking back on that WrestleMania performance this year and like, I can't go out like that. And I can understand that because Undertaker did look pretty ropey in that match. You know, it was not the way you would want to bow out if you've had the career that he's had. But the same, you know, if he does have another match, will it be any better than that? You know, maybe he is completely finished. And maybe by coming back again, it's like, well, you know, I should have called it quits in 2017. 2017. Yeah, he had the match this year, didn't he? So, I mean, it's it's a tricky one, Kenny. I absolutely can understand both points of view because you want to go out on a high. And ideally, the Undertaker should be going out with a win, shouldn't he? Not a loss. And especially a loss in a match that really wasn't that good or wasn't as good as people thought it was going to be. I don't know. What do you think he should wrestle again?
It's hard, isn't it? Part of me says yes. I really enjoyed the retirement kind of ceremony thing that he did, but I just think that's not the match to go out on. I think it was it was sad, and it shouldn't be sad. So I would like to see him do one more. I don't want to see it against Roman Reigns. Nothing against Roman. I just wouldn't really want to see it be against Roman. So
yeah,
I guess we'll see.
I mean, to ensure that the match goes well, it would really need to be a short match. I don't think you can put him in a long match again, just in case.
Mm-hmm.
And if he were to wrestle Cena at WrestleMania next year, could they get away with like an 8-minute match? I mean, if you put him in there for 20 minutes, I'm not sure if The Undertaker could hold it together for that long, especially after that performance against Reigns. Would people be disappointed with like an 8-minute match? But they could probably do a pretty hot 8-minute match, and with Undertaker winning, and that would really be the way that most people would like to see him go out, I think.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see how it goes. But just to finish off very quickly, the PWI 500 has come out, which is always a source of contention with people. But here is the very quick shout out to some UK guys. Marty Scurll was number 31 in the list. Pete Dunne was 29. Zack Sabre Jr. was 26. Will Ospreay was 21. Neville was number 11. But here's the top 10, and I just want to read you the top 10 and just let me know, is there anyone in the top 10 that you think shouldn't be there, or is there anyone who's not in the top 10 that you just off the top of your head you think maybe should be in it? So, number 10, we've got The Miz. Number 9 is Bobby Roode. Number 8 is Dean Ambrose. Number 7 is Samoa Joe. Number 6 is Nakamura. Number 5 is Kenny Omega. Number 4 is Roman Reigns. Number 3 is Kevin Owens. Number 2 is AJ Styles. And number 1 is Kazuchika Okada.
Yeah, well, I mean, Okada's a guy that I think if I was still doing the PS50, he would probably be number 1, if not number 1, number 2 this year, because he's just been that good. I mean, as for the rest of them, I mean, Bobby Roode shouldn't be in the top 10. Neither should Dean Ambrose. I mean, really, I don't really want to comment on it, Kenny, because it kind of takes me back to the PS50 days. And that's something that... I don't miss it at all, no. I mean, I did, in my last book, Power Slam Interviews Volume 2, I did a big thing on the PS50 in there at the back and explaining what a... I mean, it was a terrific article to do for a long time, in the sense that it really did make a big difference to sales, and it was a talking point. And then after a while, it just became something that people just complained about and didn't really make that much difference to sales. Lots of the writers on Power Slam didn't like contributing to it because it was a really tough piece to put together. And there was a lot of things about it that were just like, you know, that you look back on and you think, if I had the choice, would I have continued doing it? Well, of course I had to continue doing it because we've been doing it since 1994. So I couldn't stop. But at the end, it just became such a difficult article to put together. And the other thing about it was, again, is you had an audience that were primarily WWE fans who didn't really watch New Japan. And a lot of people didn't care about New Japan and would never watch it, no matter how amazing it was. And this applies now, you know, in the 2007 era. Lots of people will not watch New Japan Pro Wrestling. They've just got no interest in it. You're not a real massive fan of it, are you, Kenny?
No, not really.
Right. So lots of people won't watch it. Doesn't matter how many times people recommend it, say, oh, you've got to see this match, you've got to see that match. This guy was terrific, or that guy's much better than this guy. Lots of people are never going to watch it. They're just never going to care. So when they're reading a list and there's people on it who they will never care about, who are ranked higher than their favorites, who they believe are the best in the world or some of the best in the world, it just annoys people. And you could say, well, you know, that's the whole purpose of a list like this anyway, is to provoke debate. And obviously PWI in a sense have succeeded because we're talking about it now. But I'm just talking about it from the standpoint of actually putting it together in a magazine. So it took a lot of flack for that list each year.
I think what's good about lists like that, for somebody like me who is primarily a WWE viewer, but like, you know, there's a lot of people, the New Japan thing's interesting, and it's probably a bigger topic for another time, but some people who love New Japan are incensed that some people just watch WWE. Incensed. And then other people who just watch WWE are incensed that people who watch New Japan make it, oh, that's the best and you can't compete with it. So there's this kind of weird like friction between New Japan fans and WWE fans. But what I always found that was good about the PS50 and the PWI 500 is, as someone who doesn't watch New Japan very often, those statistics can make me figure out, oh, who should I maybe just check out a match from? And I can go and check. So like Okada. Okada's someone who I have checked out a few of his matches with, AJ or Omega. So I think that the list can actually be good for people who mostly watch WWE, but sometimes just want to dabble into one or two matches and not really go any further.
Oh, absolutely, Kenny. I mean, the whole purpose of Superstars of Wrestling and Power Slam was to encourage people to broaden people's minds when it came to wrestling. I don't say that in a patronising way, but back in 92 when it started, it was all WWF in the UK. I mean, a lot of people just didn't watch anything else. A lot of people weren't even aware that other promotions existed. So by covering all those different promotions over the years, especially ECW, which was a company that we covered heavily, lots of people became ECW fans. That's a magazine's job, I think, to introduce all this other wrestling to just like when you read in a film magazine. If I remember years ago reading, I think it was Uncut magazine or possibly Empire, and or maybe it was Neon or some film magazine anyway, and they recommended all these films from the 70s that I'd never even heard of. Watched them, I was like, wow, those films were amazing. And I always bought the magazine after that because they had pointed me in the direction of these movies I'd never even heard of. That was the magazine's job. And that, to me, was Superstars of Wrestling and Power Slam's job, especially in the pre-internet age, was to really alert people to the existence of this amazing wrestling and cover it and, you know, encourage them to become fans of other different types of wrestling, so that if they went off WWF or WCW or ECW or whatever, there would be something else that they would be willing to watch and they would remain wrestling fans. And yes, cynically, they would continue buying Power Slam. But, you know, that was the goal, was to make them fans of, or encourage them to become fans of many different types of pro wrestling for their benefit and not only our benefit as well. So these lists definitely do serve a purpose. Absolutely, they do. And by putting Okada at number one, I'm sure PWI will get a lot of people talking. People will be checking out the site, hopefully, for them buying the magazine. So it should be good for them, you know, and they haven't alienated the WWE audience by including a lot of WWE people in the top 10. So, you know, I understand why they've come up with the list that they have.
I do just want to say one person who I think absolutely deserves to be in the top 10 who is not in there is Cody Rhodes. I think he should 100% be in that top 10. Joey Ryan, who is, I mean, I never thought there'd be a day where I'd be agreeing with Joey Ryan, but he did put a tweet which I think is really, really, really worthwhile, which he said, you know, it's kind of silly that Cody Rhodes isn't in the top 10. He did a WrestleMania, Bound for Glory, Final Battle, and Wrestle Kingdom all in one calendar year. And is now the Ring of Honor champion, and he's, you know, he's one of the most talked about wrestlers in the world. So I feel like he should probably be in the top 10. That's just my take, though.
Yeah, I mean, if the PS50 was still going, you know, we would, when Drew Galloway had his run in 2016, it would have been, where he was wrestling for all these different companies and doing all these different things and trying to reinvent himself. The PS50 would have absolutely recognised that if it was still going, and it would have recognised Cody Rhodes as well. That was something that we were always very motivated to do, was to recognise people who'd really gone out there and really try to make a name for themselves and improve themselves, better themselves, and you know, advance their careers, and in many ways make pro wrestling better as well. So Cody Rhodes certainly would have been recognised. And no, there's not going to be a PS50 this year.
I mean, if you want to do an audio PS50, we've got the time. I can only imagine the dread. The dread. Don't tease him with that. Don't tease him with that.
No, no thanks, Kenny.
So as we leave you, Finn, where can people go to read your musings in the main event of SummerSlam 92, write to you about how they want to see another PS50, and generally just say hello? Where can they go to do that?
Yeah, they can read the SummerSlam piece at finleymartin.co.uk. They can follow me on Twitter at finleymartin and at PowerSlam Online. And where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me at KennyMC1985, and you can also find the brand @inside_the_ropes. Tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Patreon, it's tomorrow. If you're listening to this on the main feed, then it's today. Today, Friday, 3 p.m, tickets go on sale for the London, Manchester, Glasgow Shawn Michaels shows at insidetheropes.co.uk. The Ireland shows for Dublin and Belfast, they're available at ticketmaster.ie. And we've just announced a one-night-only show with Kevin Nash coming up in November, November 20th, in London at the Dome, Tufnell Park. So do come along to that if you're in the London area. And yeah, that's pretty much it. That's all the plugs. So we're going to go and enjoy our weekend. And we hope that you enjoy yours too. We'll be back next week. And do send us via Twitter some ideas for long form topics. And maybe we'll have, you know, every few weeks we can take, you know, 20 to 30 minutes to talk about a particular person, angle, story, character, whatever. I know that we have promised to do one on Stephanie McMahon at some point. So as soon as she's back on TV, we'll get her claws out and we'll record something on her. But in the meantime, have a great week. Thank you. And thank you, Finn, for taking your time to speak to the masses.
Thank you very much for having me. Thanks for listening. And if you enjoy our podcast, please recommend it to others.
We'll see you next week. If I be tonight, if I'm set tonight.